But I feel like the longer I talk, the less sense I start making.
No, that's a pretty good rule of thumb. I think that's physics or something. Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 37, and we are recording this on Saturday, September 8th, 2012. I'm your host, Steven, or as known on the boards, Dr. Finkelstein. Today I have my trusty sidekick.
Hey everyone, Ninsage here, or Joe if you prefer. And today I'm going to be talking a little bit about new IPs that appeared on the Wii and how we might like to see them show up on the Wii U. And our special guest today is...
I was hoping you're going to do that in a Kermit the Frog voice. It's Knack the Nud, Knack for short, also known as Duncan. I'll be talking today about the backwards compatibility of Wii controllers for the Nintendo Wii U and the pros cons of that.
All right, well that sounds good. And later we'll be discussing backlogist and the nature of the backlog itself, how they form, how we react, and how backlogist went. So first we'll jump into the now playing section. And we'd like to hear from our newcomer, Duncan. So what have you been playing lately?
Well, I just picked up this week on the PS Vita. Sorry for not talking about a Nintendo game, but it's Zan Pinball 2. And I've been playing that on the Vita, but it also comes on the PS3. One on the same price. And I gotta say, I kind of miss the 3D from the Zan Pinball on the 3DS. It's not bad when I'm playing the tables that are unique to the Vita, but as soon as I jump into Excalibur or something that's on the 3DS, I really find, wow, where's that 3D effect? Because I played so much of that on the 3DS. It would be interesting if I had a 3D TV that I could play the PS3 version in 3D, but I don't have that, so 3DS is my only outlet for 3D. The tables themselves I'm enjoying right now because I can get ahead of, how do you pronounce his name? A V of Escaflowne?
I think
who's
so.
Insane on the
sure.
He's always insane on the leaderboards, but he hasn't had much time yet, so I've been able to best him on a few tables right now until he actually, you know, plays it twice. The other game I've been playing right now is Bust, an Elysian Tale. And it's on the Xbox 360 downloadable game, $15. And honestly, I think right now that's gotta be my game of the year. Up until now I would have said it was Super Mario 3D Land, but honestly, I'm just having so much fun with Dust. Even when I'm not playing it, I can't wait to get back to it, and I'm thinking about it and reading things online. The game itself is it's a Metroidvania style sort of progression through the game, but it's largely structured as an action RPG. 2D side scrolling, platforming challenges to go with it, but, primarily it focuses on the combat, and the combat system is insane to watch. There's just so much stuff going on the screen, and you watch a video of somebody who knows what they're doing, and you think there's no way that you can handle all that, but then you actually get into it, and it's really easy to come to grips with, deceptively easy. But, you know, you're just flying all over the place, massive combos, huge magic attacks, and fast-paced action, and it's so satisfying to play through that combat and just feel that powerful. It's filled with lots and lots of little side quests and the normal stuff. Very occasionally, but always to great effect, it becomes self-aware of what it's doing, such as, you know, you're on a quest where you have to help this guy get his lost sheep back, you know, and the first time you come across a sheep and you walk up to it and press up and it goes into your inventory and your companion's like, wait, what did you just do? Like, what? She's like, did you just put that sheep in your inventory? He's like, yeah, why? And she's like, okay, well, never mind. You know, like, it's just, it makes fun of a few gaming tropes throughout, but it doesn't do it so often that it becomes annoying or unwelcome. It's always a pleasant, hilarious surprise when it happens. But they do occasionally break the fourth wall as well. So yeah, that's what I've been playing. It's highly recommended. If you have access to systems other than Nintendo systems, that would be my easy recommendation for the year.
You know, I wanted to ask you, going back on Zen Pinball really quick, how many different, like, Vita exclusive levels are there?
Well, there's some tables that are not Vita exclusive, but they are also available on Pinball FX 2 for the Xbox 360. And there's how many tables are there total? It's got to be it's probably about 20 tables, I think. So you know the four tables that are available on the Zen Pinball for the 3DS are there. And then there's about, well, there's 12 of the Marvel pinball tables, which are, you know, not exclusive to the Vita. I think the only Vita exclusive ones, there's the Ninja Gaiden Sigma 2 table, and, they may have a couple of other exclusives, but I think most of them are the same tables on Pinball FX 2.
Are there any exclusives on the 3DS one?
No.
Oh, that's a
no, the 3DS one kind of took four of the popular tables outside of the Marvel brand, and they just sort of repackaged four of those tables with the 3D. Apparently the Marvel Pinball is supposed to be coming to the 3DS as well, though.
Hmm. That's cool. I don't have that much experience with pinball games myself, except for Pokemon Pinball, which that could use a 3D remake, I think. You ever play that one?
I have not.
I didn't play that one.
With that.
Oh my gosh, man, it was so good.
What system was that
for? I've heard a lot about it.
It was for the Game Boy, and then I think there was a Ruby and Sapphire one for the Game Boy Advance.
Huh?
But yeah, they were both really good games, and, you know, they had a Pokemon Touch, of course, and you actually could catch Pokemon, sort of, a limited roster, but, it was just addicting. I don't know if you guys are fans of Pokemon at all, but,
Oh, I am.
Yeah, no, me too. And, you, Duncan?
Not really, but my kids are massively into Pokemon.
Yeah. Cool. So are you going to be picking up Black and White 2 for them?
I don't think I'll have to. I think he's got his money saved already.
Oh, well, that's good. That touches my heart.
yeah.
But and it reminds me of myself when I was young, trying to do that sort of thing. But yeah, so any other notes you want to say about the games you've been playing, or do you want to let
just
us know?
Just that if you're ever going to get into the Zen Pinball on the 3DS, just make sure you don't have Pandarius and Via Vescaflone on your list unless you're ready to be humbled.
It's kind of like why I stopped playing Mario Kart competitively with the people around the boards. I would get my ass handed to me very often. And I'm a pretty good player, but apparently not that good. You know, I want to ask you really quick before we move on to Joe. What is the last Nintendo game you've played?
Last Nintendo game I played would be Super Mario Land 3D, which I just finished up end of August.
Okay, so you played that a little bit later than everyone else.
Yeah, I tend not to get games at launch just because of my massive backlog. I usually wait for a price drop. Nintendo games, though, I don't know why I bother waiting, because they never drop in price.
Yeah, that's true.
Super Mario Land 3D, though, I thought was a great game. One of my favorites. Although, you know, Super Mario games always bring a smile to my face, get me out of gaming funks. They're my go-to when I need a pick-me-up in gaming. But I never realized how much I naturally twist my controllers when the action gets frantic. And not that I move them back and forth, but just that I apparently toss them to the side, which was a detriment in this game where I was using the 3D effect. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time that I'd used the 3DS and suddenly found that I was getting to a frantic part, and all of a sudden, boom, you're losing the 3D effect, and everything looks weird, and it throws you right off.
No, I totally know what that's all about. I have the same kind of problem. Like, I would, when I was doing levels that were particularly challenging, I would actually, like, lay on my bed, so my arms were locked, and I could just, like, focus, you know? Or even have my hands propped on a pillow, just, like, a sturdy, locked position, which is kind of a bummer that we have to do that, but I think the 3D is, you know, worth... It's, you know, it's a growing pain.
Absolutely. When I wasn't being a moron and twisting the system, it was an amazing effect. It really worked well in that game.
Have you played New Super Mario Bros. 2?
I have not played that one yet. It's on my list for the next time I need a gaming pick me up.
Yeah, it's a good game, but it's definitely it's a different, you know, style than 3D Land, and the 3D effect is definitely more subtle and everything, but it's still worth your time.
From what I've heard, people don't necessarily like that 3D effect, it seems, with the blurring out the background when you turn it on. They added, you know, the depth of field.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't they like that?
I don't know. I've heard a lot of complaints about it.
I think that sounds awesome, in my opinion. I know, like, whenever I am making, like, desktop wallpapers, right, just an easy, cheap way to give depth is to just put a little blur effect on things that are more in the background, you know, or super in the foreground. And so when I heard that they did that for this game, I thought, man, what a great way to make the 3D effect more drastic in what is just a 2D game, essentially, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm surprised that, people are kind of listing that as a detriment to the game, but I don't know how that could be.
I haven't witnessed it myself, but a lot of friends that I have that have played it have said they just play it with the 3D turned off because they like to see the crisp, clear visuals and they don't want it blurred out on them. But.
I mean, yeah, I can understand that. I mean, but the backgrounds of Mario games have never really been that detailed or anything like that. The colorful, I mean, you still see the colors and the shapes, which is all you're paying attention to anyway when you're, like, it's kind of in the back of your mind when you're focusing on the gameplay. Although with the new, the one for the Wii U, that seems like it'll be, like, they're kind of doing a lot more with the backgrounds. Like with that, that one.
Just
like,
that big mountain thing, right?
The mountain thing, which looks like the Fortress of Solitude, or, or there's like that, in the ghost level, there's kind of that really cool, artsy background that, I can't remember the name of the original painting it's referencing, but, the Screamer. You know, it looks a lot like that, or the Scream, or whatever it's called.
Is that the Wii U one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, alright, that's not New Super Mario Bros. 2?
No.
Okay.
No. The ghost levels in New Super Mario Bros. 2 do have a little bit more to them, but it's not like that.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Now, with New Super Mario Bros. 2, do they have that same thing they did in 3D Land, where they've got the, you know, a special Tanuki suit box that pops up when you die 5 times?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hate that. I wish I could turn that off. It's kind of like the game saying, you know what, you kind of suck at this. Here, let me dumb it down for you.
Well, I wouldn't look at it like that, though, because...
but that's how I take it, right? I'm like, oh, okay, fine. Yeah, I get it. Screw off. You know, I got this. I'm going to get it. I got 96 extra lives. I'm going to be just fine. Just let me take it.
I do think it shows up too early in this new game, in the New Super Mario Bros. 2, because 4 or probably 5, but... you know, I forgot exactly what part I was having trouble at, but, you know, just trying to get a star coin or something like that. And, I knew what I had to do, I just had to succeed at it, you know? And, you have to, like, use the raccoon tail to kind of glide yourself onto a platform, but it's a very weird window when you have to do it. So, I mean, I just needed persistence is all I needed, and it was, you know, of course, barking at me after a very short amount of tries. And, I don't know, I like the inclusion of it, and I like that they're continuing to do that with a lot of games, in the Mario series or,
The only thing I don't like about it is, and I'm not even sure what it was, but I had heard that in 3D Land, if you use it even once, you miss out on something.
Well, here's the thing. You have to, if you want to get the, you know, the super special background stuff that comes up to signify things and you get a special start, you can't even have it appear. You know, you lose a star if you use it, I think, but you also lose a star from your profile if it shows up. So what it actually means is that if you want to have the special ultra, you know, status on your profile, you have to, oh, the box showed up, I'm going to quit without saving and restart so that I can play again without having that box show up.
In New Super Mario Bros. 2, I don't think that is the case with the show up. I think it can show up and it won't be a detriment, but you're right, in 3D Land that was the case. And I had read that before I started the game, so what I would do is, like, every time I would die, let's say 4 times in a level, I'd go to another level, beat it, because some of them you could really run through, and then start over, because that would reset the whole thing. Which was kind of a bummer, but, and also, it's not like I need to have, you know, my profile. I mean, I'm the only one looking at my profile, so why do I care?
Yeah.
But, you know, we're gamers, and that does matter to us in some weird way.
Yep.
You know, since we're talking about it, Joe, if you don't mind, I might as well just talk about, you know, New Super Mario Bros. 2.
Yeah, like, okay. Absolutely.
Normally I like to put myself, you know, after all the guests, but yeah, so I've been playing New Super Mario Bros. 2 lately, as most of you guys have, and, I just finished it, like completed it 100%, although I can't gloat too much. I did, get a little help finding some of the exits. I would have my girlfriend look online and then describe what she saw without, which is my way of copping out without copping out.
It's like a super hint system.
Yeah. And I was just like, so what do you see? And she'd be like, oh, there's a red rectangle and, there's a Koopa Troopa in the air next to it to the right. I'm like, okay. So I'd kind of try to hunt something like that, you know, and she wouldn't tell me like, you know, you got to hit a block to do this or whatever. So I kind of found them. Of course, that also means that I was told where like the exits were, which it is pretty obvious from the map. The map is the way it's laid out. It's kind of clear, but still, I just didn't. I mean, this has been on the thread as well, but I don't like how it's not clear when a level's truly completed or not, like with Super Mario World it was, you know? Like, I feel like that's just been a big step back to not just have the color change when you've unlocked all the exits versus, you know, versus not. Or at least, no, I think Super Mario World, they only had a different color if there was multiple exits, and there was only ever two, so maybe it was three, I don't know. Either way.
If you do, like, everything in an entire world, does it give you a certain message, or is there just no indication?
I don't think so. I think it just tells you if you've gotten all, like, all the coins, all the star coins, or all of these, some other item that you collect. And that's it. I don't think it actually tells you on a per-world basis. But I always worry that I'm forgetting something, but I don't remember ever encountering that. But still, I mean, that's just a minor gripe. The game itself was a lot of fun, and like you were saying, Duncan, Mario is just an ounce of happiness every time. I don't care, you know, what it is or in what form, but it always makes me happy. And that's like what my entire topic in the last episode was about. And this definitely was no surprise. So, you know, definitely worth the money.
You know, I kind of like the idea of marking when you're done with an area. I wouldn't have liked it in my younger days, but now that I have so little time for gaming, I like things that just tell me, you know what, you're done with that, you can move on.
Well, plus, yeah. Too, like, you know, say, like you said that you have kids, and so you do a couple levels, you know, you're busy with your kids, your wife, and stuff like that, you don't get to play for a week, come back, did I finish that level exactly? Like, you know, we don't have the memories, or you know, that we might have used to have when we were just playing games. So it would be nice just to have some visual cues, and what would it hurt? Or have an option to turn it off or something, if it's really that big of a deal. How would that break some sort of philosophy? But the game, you know, again, it's a very good game. I don't think it's as solid as, or maybe it's just a freshness issue, but, I mean, I definitely liked 3D Land more, but maybe that's also because the Wii U version is coming out, and that, just from a visual standpoint, it's looking nicer to me. But no, it's still a great game. It's still worth my money. And anyone who likes Mario should be playing it. But there's not much else to say. I mean, you haven't played it yet. And Joe, what's your experience with the game right now?
Oh, I haven't played it yet either.
Yeah. So I'm
sort of in Duncan's boat where, like, in theory have not purchased it yet because of the way that most games drop in price. But yet I know that by the time I get it, it will not have come down a penny. So
yeah.
I don't know what I'm waiting for, but I guess other than just the time to actually play it, so.
Yeah, I tend to buy all my games right when they come out, which is actually kind of, you know, again, it's a bummer for my wallet because I could be saving money. Like, I said this already on the podcast, but I got Bioshock 1 and 2 a few weeks ago for under $20. Great used copies, but under $20. Like, one of those games new was $60, for God's sake. So, you know, patience definitely pays off, but no, I mean, with Nintendo stuff, like, you know, with Nintendo properties in particular, I can't. So, like, I might wait on Epic Mickey, Mickey Power of Illusion, it's supposed to be, or, cause that's not something I'm that interested in, even though I'm very interested in it. I'm just not, you know, like, dreaming about it at night, that kind of thing. But, anyway, so moving on from this game really quick, I just want to mention I am playing Mole Mania. I haven't been, involved in the thread as much as maybe people would hope, but, I have been playing it a little bit here and there. And that's a very interesting old game from Miyamoto. I don't know if you guys have played any of it.
I have not. I looked into it because people are kind of all buzz about it, but no, I don't have it.
I'm not digging it as much as other people have been.
Digging it. It's a mole game.
You know what? For as much as I say puns, man, I did not plan that at all. my subconscious sure did. But yeah, I mean, it's a fun game, but it seems kind of bland in some ways. I think it's just like the Game Boy color palette and the graphics. Like, it is an old game, and you know, I can't knock it for that, but the puzzles seem to be pretty fun. I think I just need to actually set some time down, and dedicate to it. And I think, I'll be reminded why I was pretty psyched to get in the first place. But, and actually I just beat some Sun Boss recently, and it wasn't that clear of what I was supposed to do. I think there was a sign earlier in the game that told me, but I didn't pay that close attention, I guess. Eventually I did knock him into the water, but it felt like just kind of a very simplistic boss battle that, you know, just, I don't know, it's not as lively as other games I'm used to playing these days.
I know that people often bring up that I guess it's the same engine as Link's Awakening.
Mm.
But so does it, I guess, what is the ratio between, you know, if you were to break it down by genre, like what, you know, how many parts puzzle game versus RPG versus action game would you categorize it as?
Let's see, so puzzle, RPG, and action?
Well, I don't even know what's in the game, but I'm just assuming.
Because I was going to say, because RPG probably zero.
Okay.
Although, you know, it's
what about third-person shooter? How much is
this is a good 90%. and then the other 10's first-person. Actually, it's funny that you mentioned the Link's Awakening thing. I didn't even put that together, but you're right. That has to be the same engine. They look so similar, and they play so similarly. But it was like Link with the Mole Mitts before the Mole Mitts existed. But no,
maybe that's where they got the idea.
Maybe. It's a good point. Miyamoto's... He's just... That bag of tricks is never-ending. Mm. It's probably... It's not really an exploration game because it's pretty clear where you have to go. It's just room to room. And there are secrets, though. So, I mean, I'd say like 10% exploration. And I guess action would be, you know, there are enemies to fight and things to move around. So maybe like 30% action and then the other 60 would be puzzle. It's just, it's pretty much like a sliding block puzzle in a way, with enemies and you can actually go underneath the puzzle to do that. So there's a second layer of it, which is pretty cool. So far things seem to be pretty blatantly obvious, like where I can and can't dig. Like there's not a lot of ambiguity, which is a pro and a con with a puzzle game. Because on the one hand, it's not letting you really decipher something, per se. But on the other hand, it's also not letting you go astray and just digging, you know, digging up nothing. So, I've seen some comments on the board about how the story is actually kind of moving. And, pretty much the story is there's this, like, douchebag farmer guy who just kidnaps an entire family of moles and leaves him in the last one a note that says, hey, if you want him back, you know, come find me. It's kind of a sick and twisted, thing. Like, I don't know. Maybe we empathize.
I'm looking at some very adorable artwork for this game with the guy and his family, the mm-hmm. main mole and his family.
And, it is a charming game in terms of that. And I mean, the enemy, the big bad guy, he's actually a pretty funny bad guy. And if you look in the thread on Negative World, you'll see a screenshot too of, one of the levels where there's some fountains with him. And yeah, it looks like he's peeing into the fountain, which is also kind of funny. Only he would piss where he eats, you know, or piss where he kidnaps. But yeah, so it's been slow, but fun. I'm enjoying it. I'm going to continue to play that. And then really quick, I'll just finish up by some irrelevant gaming information. It's not really about me, but my girlfriend just got a 3DS. She bought the pink one, and she bought Mario Kart 7, so I've been playing that a little bit more now, and that's really fun. I mean, I've talked about that. We've all talked about that. Have you guys played Mario Kart 7, like, to what degree? I'm curious.
I haven't played Mario Kart 7 yet.
No, oh man.
Played a lot of the Wii, but never went over to the 3DS one.
To me, honestly, the Mario Kart 7 is better than the Wii one.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, they're very comparable. Like, if I had to pick, like, what is the best handheld one, the best console one, I might say both of those. Mainly because Koopa Troopa Beach is in Mario Kart 7, and that's my favorite level. So now I no longer need the nostalgia of Mario Kart 64 to get my fix. So yeah, I would definitely go buy it, like, before the year's over. It's worth your time.
That was actually one of the two 3DS games I picked up when I first got my 3DS. And I don't know if it's that I put too many hours on Mario Kart Wii, but I am just starting to get decent at Mario Kart 7.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you feel there was much of a learning curve between the two, or?
No, not as much. I feel like controls quite a bit like Mario Kart Wii.
Maybe when you play Mario Kart Wii, do you use a bike or a cart?
Traditionally, I'll use a cart. I do use a bike sometimes, but.
Because I, like, exclusively use the bike, and maybe that's where the problems come in, because, you know, they drive so differently.
That probably is.
Normally I'll hop online and I'll play with people, and I'll be, like, I don't know, eighth or so. It's just probably my average. A couple weeks ago, I finally played with some other people in the same room, and I guess because they were not, you know, like the folks on the internet who just play the same game all the time and master it, I was actually able to win some races against some people. So that sort of boosted my confidence for the game in general. And so now I'm really excited that Negative World, that they're putting together Mario Kart 7 tournament, which I don't know if you have already signed up for, Steven, but...
No, my issue with these tournaments is not a lack of interest, but just a lack of ability to commit to the time, you know?
Right.
But
yeah, understandable.
I haven't played the 3DS one primarily because, you know, Mario Kart to me is always a game that I play with friends or with my kids, you know, sitting in the same room having a good time on the couch. And since I'm the only person in the household with a 3DS... I'd be playing by myself or online, and playing online really just doesn't hold the same appeal for me in that sort of game.
There's an angle to Mario Kart that local multiplayer, or even just being able to talk with other people you're playing against, it, like, you know, it just magnifies it because there's just so much crazy stuff going on all the time, and it's so fast paced and hectic at moments, and you can totally grief people, like Anand would say.
It's just not the same without my 10-year-old saying, "Wait, I'm in second place. Don't cross the finish line. Let me get first." You know.
Understandable.
You know, I'm looking at the tournament listing on Negative World right now, and it's tentatively supposed to start next Friday at which hopefully the podcast will be out before then. But the 14th at 10:15 or 10:30 or somewhere in there. See, I don't know. Maybe I'll try to do this, maybe. It's just that I know for a fact that I have plans on next Friday, so that's not a good way to start the whole thing. But anyway, enough about me. So, you know, we've been playing that. She's got a 3DS. It's all cool. I told her to get something to protect her screen. Done deal. So, Joe, let's go backwards now on our normal order of operations here and tell us what you've been playing.
Okay. So, lately I've really been playing two games. The first of which is Rhythm Thief for the 3DS. And I actually just completed that game about 24 hours ago in terms of getting all the unlockables. And I will say, I mean, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but basically it is, you know, an amalgamation of the Layton series and then with sort of the classic Sega rhythm game franchises. So if you like either of those, then you know what you're getting into. But having played the whole thing now, I think that this is going to be one of those games that the series just leaves me heartbroken overall, because I'm getting the sense that, like, me and three other people in the world bought this game. And the ending, you know, not to spoil anything, but it absolutely is set up for a sequel. In fact, it almost, you know, this, they probably really thought they were going to do like a Layton thing, because you know how the Layton games, it's like two trilogies. I don't know if you played them, whatever.
I haven't played them all, but yeah, it is kind of set up.
Yeah. And there's not necessarily an overarching thing, but they all are sort of clustered together, chronologically. So like, but in Rhythm Thief, it really is like, if a sequel were ever to come out, it would basically be an extension of the arc that has begun with this first game. And they just, there's so many things, not only after the credits, but in the little vignettes that you unlock, there's another one that like majorly teases at a sequel. So, and, you know, I think they had every intention of doing it, but I'm just getting the sense that no one else in the world has purchased this game. So that would make me super sad.
Why do you think that that's the case?
Well, Nintendo fans hate Sega.
Why do you think that they haven't bought it, or
yeah,
why?
Like, what would be turning people off, or is it just a matter of like? Because I didn't know much about it till you said something about it. So is it a matter of just marketing itself out there, or is it just maybe the art style is, or the gameplay style, or something?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a very interesting question. It could be a couple things. Because first of all, I mean, for a long time after the first Layton came out, I don't know if that series just took a while to get off the ground, but I feel like there was a similar sentiment where at the beginning people thought like, oh, what a great game, but nobody's buying it. And now, you know, we're like 7 games later that have been announced at least, and clearly the series did fine. So I don't know, maybe it's the kind of thing that just needs to catch on. I don't know if the fact that it looks so similar to a Layton game, and like I said, people have had like 5 of them to play now, if people are like, oh, I don't need another one like that. I don't know if, you know, there was that Dr. Lorik game that mm-hmm. I think Capcom made. So I don't know if now they think like, oh, here's just another, you know, clone or something, just another watered down, you know, cash-in attempt or something. I don't know if that's it. But if I were to put it on one thing, I think probably the fact that it came out within 7 days of Theatrhythm. Oh. I think that people, if they wanted a rhythm game on their 3DS, they bought that.
Right.
And that was the end of it. Which is why, you know, like sometimes we hear about games that get delayed due to like scheduling issues. You know, they don't want to release alongside something else. It really makes me wish that they had delayed this game. Just to give it more of a chance. They probably didn't know that they would get so overshadowed, but I don't know. That's in hindsight. I feel like that's probably what happened.
Yeah. I mean, it got good reviews, but honestly, until you said anything about the game, I hadn't heard of it. I think I've heard of most games, you know.
So crazy. It had a demo on the eShop, which barely does the game justice, but it was there.
I think Nintendo does a bad job about pushing those, like the information about the demos out, because I will get a notification sometimes on my 3DS, something that they're trying to tell me, but it doesn't, I don't know. Like, I also get the email, which maybe it was in there, but why not, you know, I don't know, just why not push notification something to me?
Yeah.
About like every demo that comes out. I was looking up, the Nintendogs game, cause I was thinking of buying that for my girlfriend, and, someone said, hey, look on the demo, you know, on 3DS. And so I did last night. I didn't even know that was there. You know, I didn't even think to look. Maybe that's just my own problem, and I'm just not used to that sort of thing. But that's
it's a fair
topic.
Point. And I will say the something that's really I think unique about this game, and I haven't played a ton of rhythm games in the past. I've played some, but it is absolutely true about many of the game styles, which there are many different ones, which I think I mentioned last time on the podcast. It's not just like you know, like Guitar Hero or something where it's just the same game with different songs. It is, I don't know, probably like 7 or 8 different sort of twists on how you do these rhythm games. But some of those, probably like 3 of the 7 different types, for the first 5, maybe 10 times you play them, I mean, I was just totally overwhelmed and I had no idea what I was doing wrong. And that, you have to say, is... I don't know if the mini game is designed poorly, but I think what they should have is like, you know, on Mario Party, obviously there's so many different
ways to
games,
play. Yeah.
Right. So they do that thing where you can practice it first.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if Rhythm Thief, if they had something where you could do like a no fail practice mode first, I think that would really help or something to walk you through it.
So there's nothing like that at all?
No, it just launches.
Because I'm looking at, you know, gameplay online right now, and it does look like that would be kind of challenging. Because I think this person just cut this video up together, so it maybe the gameplay doesn't change that fast. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of different things. You don't really know what you're timing yourself to. Maybe the music,
right.
But Rhythm Heaven Fever, you know, has that where most of the time, at least for every original concept they have, yeah, you know, they teach you, they and you just keep. It just keeps going until you get it right a certain amount of times,
right.
You know?
Right.
And then it jumps you in, and then from that point on, you can skip it whenever you want, but...
Right. I mean, and it does tell you before you start the game, you know, like what actual inputs you'll be using. You know, it'll tell you if it's this kind of swipe or these buttons, but it doesn't... It's so hard to put into words. It's just a rhythm, and you have to keep trying until you get it.
Well, go ahead.
Well, the thing of it is that truly, because I would play them and I would just be getting so frustrated, which for me, I usually have a pretty high tolerance. I don't usually get frustrated that easily. But for some of them, I mean, I was just like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding. This is totally broken. But you absolutely, for every game, you can get it. Eventually you have this epiphany. Oh, that's what they're looking for. And then it just I won't say it becomes easy, but it becomes extremely manageable, and then you feel like you're playing based on your own skill as opposed to, you know, just randomly stumbling through the dark. And in order to unlock everything, I had to get an A rank on every game, so I was able to eventually do that.
Well, I mean, I guess it's, you know, a game for not everyone, but I think just looking at it, I mean, it seems like it looks pretty fun, so hopefully more people go check it out.
Yeah, and I think it's such a good combination of, I mean, the aesthetic, I mean, the story was just, I don't know, it was just really nice. It was just a really fun, comfortable game. So, I hope it gets some of what it deserves, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they should have put Ooh La La from Space Channel 5 in there.
Well, there's a Space Channel 5 minigame.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, there's one of those and a Samba de Amigo game.
Yeah,
let's see, now I'm interested.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of feel like they, because there's only one of each, if I'm not mistaken. There's like 50 different, well, not different genres of minigame, but there's like 50 different minigames. And I think there's only one Space Channel 5 and one Samba de Amigo. There might be two Space Channel 5, but yeah. And the funny thing is, you know, I only played Space Channel 5 for the first time like 2 months ago. And I would not, like, they don't make it very clear. I mean, it's just a game. It's just a mini game. They don't, you know, there's no one, it doesn't take place on a rocket ship, that game, or anything like that. The Samba de Amigo one is given to you by a guy in a sombrero and a poncho with maracas. So that would probably be a pretty good.
It's obvious. Yeah.
Hint. But, and I think that music might actually be from Samba de Amigo, the one used for that mini game, but I don't know because I never played those. But that game, man, that was impossible. people who played Samba de Amigo had no problem with that minigame. They were like, oh, I aced it on my first try, but that's because I have the muscle memory from playing Samba de Amigo so many times. So anyway.
Do you actually shake the 3DS then? Like a maraca?
No. It's just, again, I'm not really sure. How did Samba de Amigo control?
Well, you had a maraca in each hand, and you had to like shake it up high, medium, or down low, right?
Right. So this is you do on the D-pad, you've got up, left, and down, and then on the face buttons, you've got X, A, and B, and those represent your, you know, up, outsides, and down.
Right.
Yeah. I will say, you know, it does use everything the 3DS can. I mean, there are some of the more frustrating games are the ones with, that rely on the tilt controls. But really, it's just a matter of figuring out what the game is asking for. And then it becomes not easy, but at least you know what is expected of you and you know what you are being asked to do. So. Anyway, the other game I'm playing, which I won't talk for too long about, is The Last Story, and I am not that far into it, maybe 4 or 5 hours, maybe. And all I'll say so far is I was expecting to really just fall in love with the game right off the bat, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it hasn't hooked me yet. And like I said, I'm real early in, so, you know, maybe that moment just hasn't happened yet. But I also kind of feel like I don't have a good understanding of the battle system. Have either of you guys played The Last Story?
No, I've not played it, not really seen much on it. I still got a whole lot of Xenoblade to play, so like,
yeah.
I haven't just thought much about any of the other, Pandora's Tower is not even necessarily Coming to America, but yeah, so I haven't thought about any of that.
Yeah. What about you, Duncan?
No, I wanted to pick that one up, but you know, I picked up Xenoblade Chronicles and haven't touched it yet. And so I'm still in this place where I feel like I should support the fact that that game got released. But, you know, until I've played, at least started the other one, I feel like, why am I spending more money?
No, yeah, that's a good point. Well, anyway, I just, I don't know, you know, I feel like there is a underlying concept to the battle that I'm just not quite getting yet. I think it's because you have some options. So if you haven't seen it, it's like a really cover based action RPG, which is, I don't know that there's another game that quite has that focus, but, so I'm not sure yet. Like, it seems like you don't have to really use the cover if you don't want to, but like, I've already gotten one move that if I use it on an enemy, while leaping out from cover, it does, you know, amazing damage. So I guess I need to figure out exactly what the philosophy is supposed to be for playing this game. Like figure out that balance between hiding and stealth and waiting and being patient and just running in and trying to obliterate everything. So I'm just not quite there yet. And, it's just made the combat a little less comfortable. I kind of feel like I'm, like my head is swimming, like the battle begins and I'm just like running around. And, you know, you've got this team of three other people and they're always doing stuff. And I'm not sure, like, am I supposed to be, like, should I just be by them defending them? Am I supposed to be going and like trying to, penetrate enemy lines to like get rid of the enemy wizard? You know, So I don't know. I don't know if it's just that there is no one right way to play and really I have the freedom to play however I want, or if I just don't know what I'm doing.
Now, question, do you play with a classic controller or do you play with the Wii Remote and Nunchuck?
Well, I had been playing with the Wii Remote and Nunchuck because I typically always prefer it, but someone on another website told me, they were like, oh, you have to use it with the classic controller. So yeah, that's what I started doing. And so far, the only real noticeable difference is you do get the camera control with that other stick. But again, I'm not sure really how much that helps, because even with the Wiimote and Nunchuck, you can just tap Z and it'll center the camera, which is basically what you have to do even if you're using the classic controller. Because it doesn't turn the camera when you turn your character.
Mm.
So, you know, you can walk forward and then walk straight back at the camera and the view will stay fixed. It will eventually correct. Like if you're making a wide arcing turn or if you just don't touch the camera for a few seconds, it'll correct. But in the midst of battle, when you'd be looking this way and looking that way, you know, it doesn't stay locked behind you. So I end up tapping to center the camera constantly anyway. So we'll see. We'll see if, you know, again, it's entirely possible that I just don't know yet, what the advantages are or what I should even be focusing on or looking for an advantage. So we'll see.
The other thing that intrigues me about that game is that it's got the online multiplayer, which I wouldn't expect from that sort of game. Have you tried that out at all?
No. I'm going to wait till I feel I have any idea of what I'm doing before I leap into that. Plus, it really is the kind of game, and you know, I love online co-op. Like any game, if it says it has online co-op, I'm at least somewhat interested. But I'm not sure. It seems to be like a boss rush mode, I think. So I'm just not sure how alluring that will be. And I don't know. Right now, my opinion is it seems like one of those games where they kind of like, you know, we're just like, oh, everyone loves online multiplayer, so we'll put it in. But I will not understand why some games get that and then other games that probably should have online multiplayer do not. But who knows? So anyway, with that, I guess we will finish up now playing and move on to our break and come back with what do you think?
This is the What Do You Think section of the podcast, where I'm going to bring up three quick topics and I'm just going to get some general opinions about them from everyone. First, V of Escaflone, I think it's got an A on it from the video he sent me. V of Escaflone posted a trailer of this game called Super Hexagon, and it's from the makers of VVVVVV, and it looks effing nuts. And yeah, I don't know. You guys have both seen the trailer. I've seen the trailer. Obviously, none of us have played it, but this thing, I mean, what do you guys think about it? This is... It looks
pure really, insanity.
Yeah,
like pure insanity.
Like I like it a lot, and it's got great music so far that I think could really keep me interested in to pursuing this game more. But I don't understand if my brain can actually handle that.
Do you think that this trailer? Are we seeing like an advanced level?
Here was my thought on it when I first watched it. I looked at that, and it looked to me like it was kind of speeding up and slowing down. So it almost looks like maybe once you get into the gap, you know, you find the gap, it's like it speeds itself forward to the next part. So I wonder if it actually gives you more time. If you're not being so on top of getting to the next gap, does it slow down a bit and give you a chance to get there before zoom, you know, speeding you past that section and onto the next little section? I don't know.
It's just hard to say. It's more speculation right now, but yeah, I mean, it looks very cool. I mean, but man,
yeah, it just didn't look like it was a steady progression. Like it was like speed up, slow down, speed up, slow down, speed up. So just a little bit of fluctuation there because the guy was obviously good and had it memorized.
But I wonder if that's just because of the beat of the song as well.
It could be.
I mean, if this is some sort of basic level, I mean, because okay, Bitrip Fate. Have you guys played that?
No.
Which one was that? I get the names confused.
We're on a rail and you're kind of moving around shooting things back and forth, but you're on a rail the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like a curvy rail usually. And,
gotcha, yeah.
So with that game, I haven't completed it, and I just was talking to Zero about how, like, I probably never will. I don't have the interest that I thought I did. But I feel like that game kind of started off, I mean, it was, of course, the first level's easiest, but it started off hard and just stayed hard. So hopefully, like, Super Hexagon Trailer does have some sort of mode for easing you into it. Although VVVVVV is kind of just, it just goes. I mean, some levels, I guess, are a little bit more challenging than others, but because of the nature of the game, everyone eventually can do it. And it seems pretty consistent throughout the whole thing. It's just different kinds of challenges as opposed to harder challenges. So I don't know. But I'm definitely keen on the style of this game, and I'm really interested in it.
My thought is that it needs to come out for 3DS so that it could just explode your brain instantly.
Mm-hmm. What? Yeah, that would be insane.
You think they could do some good effects with that?
Yeah, I mean, because it looks like you could. I don't know if it's supposed to be like a
tunnel.
Yeah, perfect, like a tunnel. But I kind of get that impression, and
that was my
effect. Yeah. I think that would just take something that is already ludicrous and just make it rain meltingly crazy.
Ludicrous and making it rain. Are you listening to hip hop?
Oh boy.
Anyway, so we'll move on to the next one, which is I wanted to bring up the Wii U SKU rumors. And I mean, the rumor is simply that for like the first time ever, that I can recall anyway, Nintendo might be considering doing different groups of its console at launch, different prices, different things in the package, etc., which normally they've really been against, at least from the start. So there's the 250, then the 300, and then the 350, and it's all supposed to come out on 11/11/12, which would be pretty cool. The sooner the better. That'll be right before my birthday as opposed to right after. So,
perfect timing.
So I'm good either way. Yeah, definitely. What do you guys think? Do you think that this is a possibility? I mean, I would suppose the 250 would be the core console. The 300 maybe would have some sort of game with it, and then or some sort of extra, and then the 350 would be a game, maybe another controller, tablet. I mean, I don't know. Do you guys have any speculation on that?
I honestly can't see one of the price jumps being for a game. I mean, I personally expect them to pack in a game either way because it was so successful for them with the Wii, having Wii Sports in there to force everyone to come to grips with these new controls. And I think that they would be doing themselves a great disservice to be selling a console SKU without that game that they want everybody to be, you know, playing to come to grips with the system. And I just don't see them charging a $50 premium for a pack-in game. It's just too much, you know? I mean, a $20 premium on a pack-in game, fine, but you can't charge somebody a $50 premium, which is, you know, the cost of a game anyway, for a pack-in. So I think it's got to be, if these SKUs are true, it's got to be something to do with additional hardware. Like, you know, maybe you've got a SKU that's for people that already have a bunch of Wii remotes and nunchucks, you know, but then you jump up $50 for the people who need a Wii remote and nunchuck because they never got on board with the Wii.
Right, yeah. What if the 250 just had the pad and no Wii U controllers, whatever, or Wii controllers in general? That would be kind of interesting. And I kind of appreciate that. I mean, I have three controllers, I think, lying around here, which is more than enough for my needs, but yeah, it would be kind of, you know, value I don't need to have a Wii remote and another nunchuck around.
Exactly.
Although, then there's three tiers, so like, say you had the basic console, then you add a Wii remote and a nunchuck, which would be you know, considering the price, a good value for another $50. And then what would then maybe another gamepad be the $350? Although, to give you the option of not getting another gamepad unless you get the Wii Remote and Nunchuck also seems kind of weird.
So, well, have they announced what they're doing for storage? I mean, is it all flash cards or what? I mean, maybe they've got something with a larger memory capacity. I mean, that was certainly a successful way to get the 360 into households, was to have the, you know, the GIMP one without any hard drive.
I would hate it if Nintendo, like, I'm okay with different bundles, you know, like, okay, you buy this price, you get the games or these controllers stuff, but I don't want to be deciding between, like, making a decision right now where I don't have all the information. Like, if it was like a bigger hard drive or something like that, I mean, I don't know what downloadable games are going to be out for the Wii U that I'm going to necessarily want to buy, and you know, how big those file sizes are, you know, like, so.
Especially if they start having whole games for download.
Right.
Well, looking at the size of that box, I can't imagine it's got a hard drive in it. It's got to be some kind of flash memory system that you can upgrade or swap in and out memory cards to increase your capacity to download more stuff.
Isn't it actually fairly old news? I'm just remembering. Didn't they say you can just hook up any external hard drive?
Yeah,
that's right.
Geek.com, which is just what Google brought me to, but I'm looking at an article right now that came out around E3, and apparently, yeah, it's going to have a flash-based memory system, which it might come with a card, like a small card, like how the 3DS did, but yeah, it'll be open to allow you to plug in a USB hard drive, which is great, because, I mean, mine's FireWire, but either way, you know, you can buy cheap hard drives yourself, and I think Nintendo wants to allow that to happen so you can upgrade your storage as you see fit, which I think benefits them in the long run, and also makes it so you're not buying some sort of super expensive Nintendo brand hard drive that's really pointless.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, Xbox, yeah.
Right, exactly. I mean, I would do that only if they were shaped like mushrooms or Triforces or something. That'd be kind of neat. But otherwise, it's not worth it, so.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, that I'm all right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's all speculation.
Yes. I'm thinking maybe one of the $50 jumps could be packing in New Super Mario Bros. U. Because I don't think it would be like Nintendo Land. I don't think that would be a $50 jump. I think that probably, as you said, Duncan, that probably will be the game that has to be packed in with all Wii U's, you know, to be that tech demo for what the system can do.
Right.
But I could see maybe, because otherwise, have we heard if Wii U games are definitely
60 or not?
Yeah, have we heard if they're 60 or 70 or what?
No. Jesus, don't say 70. But no, there hasn't been any confirmation about that.
Okay.
What I suspect really quickly is I think that we might even see $40 games, like 40, 50, 60. I think that there's going to be a tier depending on what type of game. If it's like a fully HD type thing, it'll be 60, kind of like on the Microsoft and Sony platforms. But if it's more like a Wii Sports, they might charge only $50. And maybe then budget titles might be even 40. I could see them doing that.
That would be amazing. I mean, I wish people did that already, just for any platform. But I guess the counter argument then is that, like, well, then, like, Mario games would be $80 or something like that, right? If you did it based on
caliber,
projected value or something like that. Yeah. Because I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast before, but, like, back in the day, like, what was it, like, Chrono Trigger was $80 or something like that, right? So before there was, like, a more regulated, like, a established pricing, then certain games would just come out and be astronomical, no?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's within reason. And now that they've established a certain structure, I don't think they can easily go back from it. But, I mean, and really, if they take 60 as the top, and then they kind of work their way down, that'll make the $60 games, you know, feel less of a burden if not every game is going to cost you that much. But really, they're still getting the $60 they want, which is $10 more than the $50 they were originally getting.
Yeah, so, no, I would love it if the companies could be trusted to, you know, work down only. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Isn't that trickle-down economics? No?
I just don't see the, you know, that mid-market game being successful anymore. Everything's very polarized towards, you know, your AAA game and your downloadable $5, $10, $15, even $20 game, but that mid-market at $40, that A-level game that's, they can just charge less for, but nobody buys them.
Which is so weird. I don't understand. Like, have people no longer want, like, that intermediate experience? I think it's probably
that there's so many awesome games coming out so frequently across the industry that you get a game that comes out and it's only $40. And what does that suggest? It suggests that they don't feel this game is worth the $60. So you go, well, hang on a sec. I can get this AAA game that's now dropped in price and I can buy that one for $40. Or I can get this new game that nobody had faith in to sell it for $60. You know, you can get away with that for a downloadable title because sure, you know, $20 for a downloadable title. Well, that's got to be a really good game. You know, but you can't do that on a disc-based game and expect the market to see quality.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably very right. I don't think about it as much like that from a personal standpoint. Like Picross was only $20, but that's a damn fine game, and it's not so much that I don't think it could sell for more, but I think that they just know it will sell more at a lower price because it'll be more easy to buy a game like that.
Well, certainly you and I and the people that are probably listening to this podcast would be of that mindset because they, you know, they're invested in games and they research them and they read about them. But I'm talking about the marketplace as a whole, you know, and the average public consumer is not going to be researching these games.
Yeah.
True. Well, okay. With that, we'll move on to our last topic. A surprise 2012 release was announced for the 3DS in Fluidity Spin Cycle. Which is actually a really cool surprise, because, I mean, Fluidity is a pretty renowned game that most of us, I think, can appreciate. And this looks like to be a whole new sequel with, you know, maybe some new power-ups, but definitely new levels and challenges. And I think it could look really nice on the 3DS with a, you know, subtle 3D effect and all that. It also has the gyroscope controls, which may or may not prove fun. I guess we'll see when the time comes. But you guys interested in this game?
A little. I never played much of the first one, but it certainly does look very visually striking. I like the color scheme. I like the art style. And I personally think the gyroscope controls are absolutely the way to go with this type of game.
Mm-hmm. And Joe?
I played the demo for the first one, and I don't know. It's not for me.
What? Okay, well, then I'm going to have to hold the podcast up on its britches here and say that Fluidity is awesome. And it's a very interesting, unique platformer. It's very fun. It's got a great art style. And I definitely 100%ed it. And my only gripe with the old game was that the final level was really just a little grating because it was really easy to, you know, to perish or fizzle out, I guess you could say. And actually, the only reason why that was a pain in the ass was because the way I was doing it, I wasn't hitting a certain checkpoint, so I had to do a lot of it over multiple times when really I kind of shouldn't have if I just went a little farther ahead and then came back to finish my job. But either way, it's cool, and you know, it's cool that you guys don't know either much about it or just it's not your cup of tea, but there's a lot of people drinking that tea, so
it's the type of game that I can play the demo for and go, well, that was fun, but I'm done. I don't need to go any further than that. I've had my fix by the time I finish the demo.
It bums me out when demos do that, but I mean they do it to me too. Other games, but you know, and I was the same way. I downloaded the Fluidity demo, liked it enough, but actually didn't buy Fluidity until it came out for the coin usage on Club Nintendo, and then I got it that way, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. I should have really bought this. Maybe that's an example where the price was a little too high, which was only like $7 or something, but you know, I mean, who knows? I guess I'm not going to sit here and analyze the game, but I think the sequel will be really great, and it'll be curious to see how much that'll cost, because I should have looked this up before. And just, do you guys know Fluidity Spin Cycle is supposed to be a download title?
That's, I do not know.
I don't know.
Let's see. I'm doing a little bit of research.
Yeah, me too. Oh, yeah, 3DS eShop, according to NintendoLife.com. So hopefully it'll be, you know, an appropriately priced thing, but I find myself more apt to buy download titles off the eShop than I do the Wii shop. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because the handheld's newer. But so, I'm psyched.
You know, I think one thing that might actually really lend itself to the 3DS is that, because the theory with the Wiimote was you move the background, right? And then the water adjusts.
Yeah.
So it might actually, you know, if you're holding the thing and you're moving the entire thing, I don't know, there just might be a little more visual, it might feel more right. You know what I mean?
You're saying with the 3D effect?
No. Just with a handheld in general.
Right. It'll be more,
you would actually be moving the entire...
It's more tangible, as if you had like a little...
Yeah.
Like one of those marble games.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You just made me more excited. although I will say, the 3D effect actually, I think, turned off for this game. You cannot turn it on at all. Because of the fact that obviously that would throw things out of whack, because you're going to be tilting it.
So they
said, you know what, just screw it. Let's just focus on the game itself.
Well, thank goodness they're allowing developers to do that. My fear was that they weren't going to allow, you know, developers to make a game that didn't have a 3D effect, but I'm glad they're open to that.
Yeah.
I can't think of any others that have been released that don't have a 3D. Are there any others?
Not that I know of, but...
There's a couple games that will turn it off for segments, right?
Right. I have not heard of that, yeah.
Yeah. Such as Rhythm Thief. Have you guys bought that yet?
Actually, while we've been sitting here.
No,
I didn't. But that's not to say that I can't in the future. If I see, how much did you pay for? If you don't mind me asking.
I think I got it. It was like $36 on Amazon.
I don't know.
See, that was me, that was with or without the Ooh La La downloadable content.
The Ooh La La lockable.
Yeah.
Unlockable. That's a little steep for me. I think for a rhythm game in general.
Yeah, I understand.
Just because I guess I'm not sure what I'll get out of it, but I'll keep an open mind, I swear.
No, that's cool. You know, hey, $5. Someday it'll be $5, or if it's as scarce as it seems, it'll be $200.
Yeah.
With a free Earthbound pack in. So, let's take another quick break, and we'll get into our main topics.
So my topic that I wanted to talk about was the Nintendo Wii U's backwards compatibility with the Wii controllers. You know, the pros, the cons, the ramifications of doing that. And I'll set the stage here for you, a little bit of history. I'm a PS Wii 60 owner, right? So I've got all three consoles, and I've got the four kids and a wife and lots of friends that come over, and we game party style quite a lot. And so you need four controllers for all the systems. Probably more if they supported more, but that gets really pricey. I mean, that adds up to a lot of controllers, and especially this last generation where, you know, the prices were pretty high. You know, you're looking at $40-$50 for a controller. You know, if you've got a Wii, then you're like, well, hang on a second. I need four Wii remotes, and I need four nunchucks, and I need four classic controllers and one balance board. Thank God. But, you know, it all adds up. And so I've been crying out for the last couple of years. Maybe not literally, but on boards saying, you know, what's wrong with the current controllers? Let's keep them going for the next system. You know, I look at the PS3 and go, well, they've had basically the same controller design for the last, since the PlayStation came out. You know, they've tweaked it and they've added little bits, but what more can they really do, or what more do we really need them to do? And the, you know, the Xbox 360, who's got a wonderful controller to hold for the classic style of controller. And then the Wii, but so now the Wii U comes out and they're announcing, hey, we're backwards compatible with all the old controllers. And my initial reaction was, hey, rejoice. You know, this is awesome. Great. Just exactly what I wanted. But then I started thinking about it and going, I wish they had limited it to saying, well, we'll be backwards compatible with the balance board, sure. The Classic Controllers Pro, great. The Nunchucks, the Wii Motion Plus, sure. But why do they have to allow backwards compatibility with the original Wii Remote before the Motion Plus capability? That seems to me like a maybe a misstep right out of the gate. And the reason for that, I mean, the regular old Wii Remotes, they failed to live up to that initial promise of good motion control. They were decent for broad motions. They were great at pointing. They're great if you just want some waggle controls thrown into your games. But the one-to-one motion control wasn't there. And, you know, they fixed this with this add-on, the Wii Motion Plus, a huge leap. It should just be the minimum standard for the next generation of Nintendo games. And the problem with add-ons is that developers just fail to take advantage of it consistently. You'll get the odd gem here and there that does, but for the most part, people are always programming for what has the widest mass adoption. And so usually add-ons suffer from this lack of developer support, and it just seems to me that, you know, Nintendo's setting themselves up right out of the gate with an add-on problem. So I can see there's advantages here, right? I mean, certainly you want to get the maximum number of Wii U systems into households. And to do that, you want to make sure that everybody who's got a Wii Remote, you know, there's no market confusion here. They just know, hey, did you have those Wii controllers? Great. They're going to work. No, did you have this type? That will work. This one won't. That's going to confuse the casual market. I get that. And, it saves a lot of cost for people like me that are feeling that they have to buy a whole bunch of new controllers. And, you know, it's an inclusive decision of all Wii owners. So it's like, you've got your stuff. You know what? You're halfway there. You're ready to go. You'll buy the box that'll come with the fancy new controller and the new system, and you're ready to go right away. You've got everything you need. So I get that. But it just seems to me like the games, in turn, are going to suffer somewhat from a number of third-party developers feeling that they need to support the original controllers without the Motion Plus. What do you guys think?
That is a bummer. I agree. Like, I was thinking about that as you were talking, and I guess, like... Yeah, cut out my brain fart.
Well said.
Yeah, very thorough analysis. Is it that they've allowed this backwards compatibility, or is it that, like, are we sure that games in the future are going to use some, like, simple basic controls like that? Because all the new controllers now, for a while, have had Motion Plus built in. If you buy a Wii U controller, it's just got it. There's no add-on to do, it's just in there. So. Yep. Is it perhaps that maybe it's compatible with the Wii U or the Wii controller by itself in its old form, just so you can pop in Wii Sports in your Wii U if you'd like? Or is it?
That's what I'm thinking.
Well, like, you know, I thought about that, but they don't need to allow compatibility with an original controller in order to allow backwards compatibility with original Wii games. It's not like you have a Wii Motion Plus controller that you buy and, oh, it doesn't work with the original games. They do. Right. So no, you don't need that original controller.
So yes,
that is a good point.
So to say it at all is kind of a redundancy, unless it implies what you're saying, which is that, hey, developers, you know, just put your waggle back in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, maybe they haven't said anything specifically on whether or not new games will be required to support Motion Plus, but that wasn't the impression that I got when they keep talking about, you know, all your original Wii controllers will be compatible.
I'm surprised nobody, I mean, well, maybe they did, but why we haven't heard about that, people haven't asked about that? Because you think that we know that HD is the new standard for visuals, for instance, although we're not necessarily going to guarantee that we're going to get the nicest HD visuals, I guess, but...
That's not true either. I mean, they got the $25,000 Sony 4K TV coming out next year. Is the Wii U going to support that? See, they're going to be behind the ball again.
Yeah, jeez. So I don't know. I mean, I guess that just reminds me of how little we know about the Wii U still, kind of, you know? Or at least what the outlook is from a developer standpoint. We know what Nintendo wants us to know, and they're going to tell us more, what, next Thursday? On the 13th, I think? But yeah, from a developer standpoint, we don't really know. And maybe after the 13th, they can start talking. Once there's a release date and everything, they can start telling us things about that. And so we will find out. But that is kind of a bummer point you've brought up.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that I think is, you know, there's all this market confusion about, hey, this is a new controller for your existing Wii. And, you know, I couldn't believe that my friend, my best friend in the world who loves gaming and had a Wii and has a 360, and we were talking about the Wii U, and he said, what are you talking about? Isn't that just a new controller? I'm like, are you kidding me, man? Really? You too? I thought it was just the casuals that didn't know what was going on. But, you know, it's so now you've got this thing that, you know, you're like, all your existing controllers work, and there's no line in the sand like, no, you know, this is a more advanced system. It's got more advanced controls. Every game will use Motion Plus. Does that just add to that whole feeling of, hey, this isn't a really new experience?
Joe?
I don't know.
You're asking a lot of thought-provoking questions,
good
sir.
Good question.
You're asking questions that are higher brow than this podcast.
And, this is what I came up with last night at 11 o'clock when I went, oh, hey, look, there's room on the podcast. What can I talk about?
Oh, yeah, just rub it in. Rub it in.
But, you know, it's something that struck me as like, yay, I'm so happy they did it. And at the same time, I'm just so disappointed that they're doing it. And like I say, maybe they'll have, you know, that Nintendo seal of quality where you have to use Wii Motion Plus. Who knows?
Let's just take a step back and summarize here. Okay, so the clue that we're going on saying that this might happen in the future where new games would come out and they would still use the original Wiimote and thus their motion controls would be, you know, lackluster. Our clue is that they support them at all because they don't have to, right? Is what you're saying, because original Wii games could be controlled with a Wiimote Plus, right? That's the...
Well, I guess the question is what percentage of existing Wii owners own Motion Plus controllers, right? If you've got a market out there, and let's say, I don't know, 50-60% of your market doesn't have Wii Motion Plus in their household, but they've got these original Wii remotes from that time that they bought this system with Wii Sports, are developers going to program for the 40% market that does have, or are they going to program for the 100% market that has access to the regular controller?
And then that also kind of leads credence to maybe the whole SKU thing we were talking about, where maybe that will be part of the bundle of one of them because they might want to start pushing those out. So when you buy a Wii U, you know, I mean, maybe they will have a bare bones SKU, but that $300 one includes the Wii Motion Plus remote because they want to make sure that people can play this, or, you know, but then again, you know, how are you going to stop, you know, someone's mother who doesn't realize from buying the Wii U at the lowest price because she wants to save some money and then realize, oh, well, shoot, we don't have the Wii Motion Plus because she doesn't know any better. So I don't know if they'd let themselves do that.
Well, and it seems like everyone's, you know, is really worried about not confusing people. And as you just said, Duncan, it seems like folks who even pay a reasonable amount of attention are winding up getting confused. And I guess what I really don't understand is why that seems to just be a Nintendo problem. So it seems like Nintendo is the only company that has to wrestle with this incredible market confusion all the time. But yet, like, between the PS1 and now to the PS3, they've had different versions of the controller, right? Because the first one didn't have the twin sticks on it. And then they released the DualShock, and then they moved to the PS2, and then you move on to the PS3, and those controllers keep becoming obsolete, but yet I don't feel like there was ever this, you know, wave of confusion of like, oh my god, which one, you know, what controller am I getting for the system now? Like, if I buy a PS2 controller with the two sticks, will it work on my PS3? Well, why not? It's basically very similar, except if I'm not using, you know, six axis, and if I don't care about it being wireless, then, you know what I mean? Like, how have other companies managed this?
Well, other companies have always included them, right?
Like, well,
I mean,
but
every Sony console comes with a controller.
But not that four of them or something. I mean, this is still an issue of, you know, if it's not so much that people wouldn't necessarily have, like, one Motion Plus, but if you're going to have a multiplayer game, you know, like a Mario Party or something, or Smash Brothers or Kart, you know, to demand Motion Plus then means they would have to replace all of their old controllers.
Right.
Yes, no. Whereas, yeah.
It's actually, you know, this is a more complicated situation than I guess I ever realized. I'm kind of, I'm impressed that you brought it to us, Duncan. I appreciate it. But I'm like finding myself baffled kind of in really figuring out what the solution is. It doesn't feel as easy as just, you know, not allowing the inclusion, but at the same time, it doesn't feel as easy to just force everyone to, or, you know, the opposite, which would be to just do what they might be doing and just, let everyone use old technology.
Well, and like I say, I completely understand why they're going that route. I mean, they've already got, you know, here's our new tablet controller. Oh, and here's our new, you know, pro controller for those games where you want to have a 360-like controller in your hands, you know? So they've already introducing, here's these two new controller types. I get why they'd want to just keep the existing motion controllers in their repertoire. But at the same time, it seems like you're kneecapping yourself right from the get-go.
Could it be possible that they could be saying, look, we want to support the original ones so that people could play their old Wii games and we don't have to force them to buy new controllers? However, with any new stuff going forward for any actual Wii U games, dear developers, you must use the Wiimote Plus.
Well, and that's what I would hope would happen. But now
but
imagine that situation. But now imagine that situation, right? So you tell your consumer, hey, yeah, all your old controllers work. Great, all my old controllers work. Except guess what? You can't play this game because you don't have Wii Motion Plus, even though we said your controller is going to work. It doesn't. You know, so I mean, I mean, there is that now, right? There's a handful of games where, okay, yeah, no, I really need Wii Motion Plus to play this. And usually what do? They pack in a controller as a separate SKU just in case you don't have it. But they can't really do that with every game they release next generation that uses Wii Motion Plus.
And the thing, too, is I think Nintendo themselves feel that Wii Motion Plus isn't necessary for every game. So even if they don't utilize it in the system, they then won't want to brand it as you must have this.
Sure. I mean, you don't need it for Metroid, do you? I mean, it's, you know, if you're pointing, well, your pointer works exactly the same either way. So for a large variety of games, you know, a standard controller would be just fine.
Right. I mean, although in Metroid Prime 3, there was a little bit of that, I think, wasn't there? Like, in the ship?
But you don't really need
a standard controller.
Right. But I'm saying, like, that could be beneficial or benefited by using Wii Motion Plus, but obviously it's such a minor thing that, yeah, I mean, it really is irrelevant. They can get around that and it won't be a detriment to the game, but it's pretty fascinating.
Yep.
And I guess, you know, maybe after next week we'll find out more, and maybe we won't. This is,
you know,
Nintendo.
Do you guys think that maybe, in hindsight, Nintendo just should have waited on the Motion Plus? Could they have afforded to do that, do you think?
Well, let's
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, if you do that, then let's see, then Skyward Sword is a completely different game, and has a completely different hype, and that sets, you know, that set them in motion going towards the Wii U, because that was the last... I mean, that was like the last major Wii game, really, from Nintendo. So that kind of does set a different precedent going forward into the Wii U generation. And then, it, you know, if they started saying, well, hey, not only do we have the tablet controller, but we have Wii Motion Plus, where the Wii, you know, does this, this, and that, and that might make people feel like, okay, so now you're getting around to doing it, and that might actually have more of a stain. So I think it might have been better for them in the long run to just say, okay, yeah, we kind of should have upgraded this sooner. Sorry about that, but here it is now. And yeah, we're not using it much, but at least it's there. As opposed to people even now saying, wow, they still haven't gotten around to that, and allowing their competitors to possibly one-up them.
Mm.
So,
I dig it.
Yeah. Mole Mania, are we talking about
like
that
again? Like Mole Mania, yeah.
You're digging it like Mole Mania. Yeah, I mean, anything else you guys want to say about this?
Just that I hope for the PS4 they bring back the boomerang controller that they chickened out on. That'd be good. You remember that design for the PS3 that they initially announced?
Yes.
And then what do? They go back to the same DualShock, right? So if you're going to keep the same design, you know, I Sony and 360, they can keep the same controllers. I'd be happy with that. I mean, what are they really going to change, you know? I mean, the new Wii U Pro controller, I mean, could that be any more a direct ripoff of the 360 controller? Because why? Because it's a great feeling controller for those sorts of games. You know, so I hope the PS4 and the next Xbox will keep their same ones. But for the Wii U, I really hope that Motion Plus becomes the standard and not the special treat.
Right. I agree. And I like to think that Nintendo is smart enough to realize that. I mean, it can't just be like, you know, three random guys who do nothing in the video game industry talking about video games happen to think of this before Nintendo, you know?
You would hope not.
Yeah, right. But as with Nintendo, particularly over any other company, it is amazing how sometimes the obvious doesn't occur, you know?
But you know what? Sometimes the business decisions just outweigh the artistic decisions.
Right.
Right.
And
right.
With any artistic medium, you know?
That's where the bottom line is coming down for me on this issue, is I feel it's going to be a balance between, you know, because as we talked about, there are motion control games that do not require Motion Plus. You know, they can get by with what the original Wiimote provides. So, you know, it could very well just be business decisions on, well, do we want to release this game? You know, how much is it really going to add? How many more people is it going to really bring in if it's got this Motion Plus capability versus, you know, can we get away with just the normal Wiimote and then have our potential audience this much bigger, et cetera, et cetera.
I guess time will tell. And with that, we'll take a break and we'll jump back in with Joe's topic.
Three, two, one, go!
Okay, so for my topic, I wanted to talk about the new IPs that came out during the Wii's lifetime and how we might want to see them come back on the Wii U, and if so, what the gamepad could lend to these games. So I just have a short list, and I'm sure you guys also have games that you've been thinking about, but I guess I will start with something like Zack and Wiki, which I know is a game that apparently, as far as Capcom is concerned, I think they're kind of angry at Zack and Wiki. I think that they sort of like personally blame that game for being like their failure on the Wii or something. Like, I feel like they used that game. They thought like, oh, we'll do something really unique and creative and, you know, the kind of style of game that hasn't come out in a while. And, you know, we'll put it on the Wii, and I think the sales were apparently just so bad to mediocre that apparently they were just like, all right, fuck you, Wii. We're never making another awesome game for your system. You just get Resident Evil rail shooters from now on. But anyway, but it's the type of game, you know, if people played it, they tend to love it, and I would love to see it make a comeback. And I just think that on the Wii U, with the touchscreen, there would be just a lot of new ways that you could interact with the environments. And, you know, it basically was a point-and-click adventure / puzzle game. And so I just think it would be a no-brainer for that sort of experience to use the touchscreen. And, you know, you could still, because it's not truly point-and-click, like you still move around your main character, you know, it would really make sense that you would have that stick on the gamepad so you could still control Zack, and then you could, you know, click around with the stylus to interact with the environment and stuff. So, I don't know. That was just the first one on my list. Oh, did you guys play Zack and Wiki, and do you think that would make sense for the series or what?
I loved Zack and Wiki. I thought it was one of the rare examples of a developer really getting a system and understanding what its strengths were and playing to that, and then the marketplace not getting it.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
You know, they made this great game that took advantage of what the Wii had to offer that other systems didn't, and the marketplace went, meh, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but I think on Zach and Wiki, it's been a long time since I played it, but you didn't actually move around with the thumbstick, right? You just pointed and clicked where you wanted them to move.
Oh, was it? Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Use the pointer.
Because I know I was always going point, because it was more fun. But, you know, I could see that on the Wii U tablet, you know, just tracing the path you want him to walk with your finger so that you could have him maybe avoid specific obstacles or follow a route very specifically by just quickly dragging your finger across the route you want him to follow rather than clicking in a static spot and having him take his own route there.
Almost like in Spirit Tracks on the DS with the Zelda game, you know?
Right.
You would draw, or was it the sequel? Yeah, I think it was Spirit Tracks, not Phantom Hourglass. Maybe it's both, but you would draw a path for one of your secondary characters that you were controlling, and then it would follow that path or whatever while you did other things.
Yeah, or maybe holding up the you know, the tablet to examine a puzzle a little bit closer, or those puzzles where you're manipulating an object or trying to assemble something or something like that. You know, you could just pick
right.
it up with your fingers
like
and sliding, drag it around.
Like a sliding block puzzle. You literally will slide the blocks in yeah. using your finger, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
you know, seems almost like, well, why do you have to do that? Why can't you just use a D-pad? Well, because it's slightly more immersive and every little bit helps. You know, I think yeah. it would add to the fun. We should know by now that I actually bought the game but actually didn't care for it that much. So I'm not sure where that puts me as far as the marketplace not getting it and all that.
Definitely.
I guess I'm a little more like a marketplace. But I will, you know, I'll say that again. I did enjoy it to an extent, and I would be curious to see it on Wii U anyway, because A, I think that great games, whether I like it or not, games can still be good, and they should, you know, definitely be prolific on the new Nintendo system. I think the tablet could add some new things, though, that I would be perhaps inclined to get the next one, despite, you know, the lukewarm reviews I have with, not reviews, but just the feelings I have towards the original. But I think what you guys are saying, you know, makes some sense from a hater.
Nah,
that's okay. I'll be honest, I never finished the game. I got about halfway
oh, really?
Through and never got back to it. But I found I could only play about, you know, once I got further in, I could only play about one level at a time. And after that, I was just so mentally exhausted, I couldn't do a second level in
sure.
one sitting.
Well, that's interesting, because that's actually how, like, I felt. Like, I liked it in the beginning, but as I progressed, I actually liked it less and less. So maybe if you finish it, you'd be in my camp.
Yeah.
Although, honestly, I don't want to change. Like, if someone likes the game, I'm not trying to convert them. But I'd definitely be up to seeing more of that in the future.
Yeah, sadly, probably a lot of the games on this list are probably beyond sequel hope, but we'll see. So then, I guess, moving to a game that probably would not use the gamepad, but a game that was, I think, successful as a new IP, and that was No More Heroes. I'm pretty sure that Suda has said, you know, he wants to do more games in that franchise. And I know after No More Heroes 2 came out, he said, this will be the last one for the Wii. And then he sort of clarified, because if I make another one, it'll be on Nintendo's next system. So that would be, I guess, going to sort of, as we talked about before, hopefully a Motion Plus game on the Wii U. I mean, we've already seen with Pikmin 3, there will be games that I think are designed for Motion Plus and are not necessarily, you know, hell bent on using the gamepad. So for something like No More Heroes, I anticipate if it does get a third one, probably wouldn't really use the gamepad. Although I'm sure if it were up to Suda, he would probably come up with some crazy mini game where you're doing some perverted something on the gamepad. I don't know. Did either of you play No More Heroes 1 or 2?
No, I've barely even seen videos, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I just played a little bit. I played a little bit on the PS3 as well, but no, I didn't play through them.
By a little bit, like, was there a demo that you tried or something?
On the PS3, I tried a demo. I did try. A friend of mine had the game on the Wii, so I played the first little bit of it.
Okay. Well, I mean, what's interesting is if trying to just describe Suda 51, he's the guy who I guess is overall, you know, the creative direction for the series. And in both of the games, they have these little, in the sequel, it's like, it's purely, they could be classified as mini games. And in the first one, they're just sort of quirky little byproducts of the game itself. But, Suda is, he's pretty much insane. And it really comes through in his game design. And some of them, they're a little perverted and they're always creative.
Let's like sitting on the toilet while you're saving your game and stuff like
right.
Well, hopefully there's a toilet mini game using the gamepad somehow.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like, to, you know, your sword is like this beam saber or something, and to charge the battery on the beam saber, you basically have to make like a jerk off motion with the Wiimote. So, and that's no way.
That's what you do with a real flashlight when it's going dim, though, right?
That's what I was going to say. In in his defense, is, you know, for those flashlights that you can charge up whenever you want, the way that the cell is, you know, you do pretty much have to, you know, go to town on that bad boy. Yeah, that's kind of how it works. I mean, in fairness, but I'm sure that from what it sounds like and from what I've heard of Suda 51, it probably is more suggestive than not suggestive.
Yeah,
you just got to shake it until the light comes bursting out and it's full glow.
Well, and let's just say, you know, when you're doing that, the on-screen character is holding it over his crotch, so it really kind of...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Suda, you naughty boy. Jeez. Yeah, we're all just like, what? You just halted the whole conversation, but...
Right.
Okay, so he jerks off his flashlight. Let's move on. Does Leon do that? He has one on his belt, right?
Leon?
Yeah, isn't that... Resident Evil thing.
I don't know.
Anyway, maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, continue.
Okay, so and then you know, along similar lines, there's Red Steel, which that was, you know, the first one was sort of like a synonymous with the Wii, right? Because that was, if I'm not mistaken, you know, that was like the third party game that kind of got people excited about what the possibilities of the Wii could be, right? And then they were sort of there with Motion Plus as well. Like they it seems like that franchise sort of steps in at these like key junction points in the Wii's lifespan. So I'm thinking for the Wii U, you know, I would love to see it come back. I never played the first one, but I did play Red Steel 2 and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good game, actually, and a game that, like many that we've been talking about today, just didn't really get the attention that it deserved or the praise that it deserved.
I do have it. It's just on my backlog.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
But I did buy it with the intent of one day playing it, so.
Yeah, actually, I bought it, and a friend of mine's played all the way through it. I haven't touched it yet, not for lack of interest, just for lack of time.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, in this topic, like, I primarily want to talk about just, you know, games that I would like, you know, new IPs that came up during the Wii's era that I'd like to see on Wii U, and, you know, the gamepad idea is sort of like the, in addition, but as far as Red Steel, I mean, or Red Steel 2, I should say, first of all, well, because it's such a different game. Yeah. I mean, it basically could have had a different title. Some people say it should have had a different title, but whatever.
I haven't even played Resident Evil 2 yet, Red Steel 2. I can tell you that I know that. It's clear to me.
Yeah. But, you know, they really, just this, because, you know, the guy, I can't think of his name, but the guy, he was walking around with the cane all the time. He was like the creative director for Red Steel 2. You know, he always categorized the game as a first-person brawler, and I'm sure that's partly just a marketing thing. You know, they want to attach some new genre or something to their game, but it was really true in the sense that it wasn't just a shooter, and in fact, the game was really set up so that if you really wanted to do damage, you had to rely on your sword. And I just think, you know, it was such a unique experience, and one that, as you touched on with Zach and Wiki, could only be accomplished on the Wii, at least initially. You know, now you could do the same thing on with the move and such. But so it's just the kind of gameplay and just the kind of approach to design that I would hope to see continue with this next generation. The ending of Red Steel 2 certainly set itself up for a sequel. I don't know how great the sales were. I think that they were good enough, so to speak.
Well, and I think, too, you know, juxtaposed next to the originals, like, they know that they were doing something right, so that's positive reinforcement. Even if it didn't sell gangbusters, it still did enough to maybe think, okay, hey, we're in the right direction.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird, you know, when you talk about new IPs and the timing of them, because the first Red Steel sold like crazy, right?
Right.
I mean, everyone, whether they liked it or not, kind of went out and bought that game, I guess. And so I'm sure it sold 2-3 times as much as Red Steel 2, even though from what I've heard, it is maybe half as good. You know, although I've heard some people like it. Not even. So you did play through the first one?
Not all the way through, but enough to know that it wasn't what I hoped.
There's a lot of potential with it, to be honest with you. Like, it's not a bad gaming concept, but it's just executed so poorly.
Yeah. Oh, so you played the first one as well?
Oh, yeah. Like, it's the one game I own and have not finished that is not on my backlog because I just refused to complete it. Like, I actually sat down one day. I was like, you know what? I'm going to spend a few playing sessions. I'm just going to beat it. I'm just going to do it so it can be done and I don't have some sort of gap in my gaming history. But I got so frustrated with the controls that I was just like, no, this is done. It's not even worth it.
Yeah. All right, and then the last thing that I'll contribute on this topic is just, I was just thinking about, this is not necessarily new IPs, but with a lot of DS shooters, okay, they want to control with the stylus, right? And then you move your character with the circle pad, or the D-pad on the original DS. And a lot of people really hate it. Like, I played Metroid Prime Hunters, and I just couldn't even... It's the only Metroid game that I think I haven't finished, and that, like, I didn't even get very far in it. I just couldn't deal with the control. And it's what a lot of people don't like about, like, Kid Icarus Uprising, how to really play the game effectively, you have to sort of hold the system with one hand while you're doing the stylus with the other. But what I'm thinking for, you know, like, I've got on this list, like, you know, Dragon Quest Swords or any other sort of conduit game, or if they do another GoldenEye or something, you could really pull off that control scheme now for the first time really easily with the Wii U and the gamepad, because the problem with the DS ones was the nature of the system means you're holding it up with one hand. And that means that left hand is doing all the work while your right hand has to be free to, you know, manipulate what's happening on the screen. And you're kind of putting pressure on your other hand because you're pressing on the system. But with the gamepad, you could have all that just resting on your lap. And so you could still be controlling, you know, you could still be looking primarily at the television. You're moving with the left stick, but then you're aiming or doing any sort of interacting with the environment just via the stylus. And I just think for the first time, that system, which could be, you know, as precise and as comfortable as, you know, the mouse on the PC and what everyone is always aspiring towards with pointer controls. I just think that this could be the first time where people could actually start making games, that could pull off that control scheme and actually have it be comfortable instead of rather painful, which I guess a lot of people have experienced.
I think you got a good point there. I mean, that's a key point to me is when you bring up, you know, the accuracy that you can get with a stylus moving across, and it's a larger surface too. So it's not like a DS screen that's small, but it's a larger surface. I mean, you could get some very pinpoint accurate control once you've adapted to that control scheme. You know, I guess it's a question of can you sell people on giving it a shot and getting to the point where they're good with it in a market where now you've got a controller with your dual analog and everybody's used to playing that way. Personally, I think it would be vastly superior once you've adapted to it, but there would be that learning curve.
Now, so you're saying that you would use the stylus on the screen to move your camera or move your character, but then you'd be pointing with the IR pointer still and shooting and that kind of thing, right?
No, so it'd be like basically, like, you'd be using the left stick to, like, picture, you know, first-person shooter, and you're moving yourself in space with that mm-hmm. stick. But
so
then,
with the left stick of the tablet controller.
Of the gamepad, yeah, right. Okay. But then, basically, your aiming and your looking would be with the stylus on the touchscreen.
Yeah, so pretend it's a PC sort of thing, but replace the mouse with the stylus control.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then instead of a, you know, ASDW or whatever it is, you're just using the control stick.
Right. And you wouldn't, you know, the way I'm picturing it is you would be looking primarily at the TV screen, you know, unless otherwise needed. Like, you wouldn't be necessarily, you know, you wouldn't be having to look at what your hand is doing. You could just rest that on your lap.
Well, the only thing I can see being problematic would be your shooting, because you'd have to, use your left hand then for that? But that might be tricky to shoot while using your thumb for that, because typically...
Well, it's just your left trigger, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's no different than using a dual analog and using your right finger to fire.
Your right finger, you're also not using your thumb to precisely move your character. Like, do you think that...
No, but you're using your thumb to precisely aim. Right, your right hand is doing all the aiming.
That's true.
And your right trigger finger is pulling. Now, I guess most people are right-handed, so maybe that's a.
I mean, under this control scheme, you know, if a game is going to use it, any games that have in the past, you still lose a lot of buttons.
Yeah.
Right. So it depends on.
Maybe they need a stylus with buttons.
Or just point the Wiimote at the touchscreen.
Oh God.
No, but Yeah, but you know how many the gamepad. I'm gonna look so stupid. I shouldn't even be on a Nintendo podcast if I don't know this. But how many triggers are up above the on each side? Is it like one and two?
I think it's just one.
I thought it was a trigger and a bumper, but I don't know.
Well,
I bet Google knows.
I know Google knows.
I want to say there's two.
When I said one, I thought that I'd be wrong, so. Let's see. Oh, yeah, there are. Okay, see where I knew that there was like a little arch for resting your fingers and stuff. There is a button on that too. So it's your traditional left and right like you'd see on a Super Nintendo controller. And then there's some bigger buttons that are on the ridge. And so there's four buttons, two on each corner.
Right. So I don't know. I'm just thinking, I know they'd probably be in. Well, they wouldn't even necessarily have to be in like the first person genre, but I just think that this control scheme could open up a lot of new ideas for either completely new IPs or applying them to, you know, the new IPs that came out recently. And anyway, I think it's a pretty good opportunity.
Well, and I think that's especially true when you talk about first-person shooters, like you said, because PCs always get the argument from PC players that, hey, I've got this pinpoint accuracy. There's no way that a dual analog player could compete against me using a mouse because of that fine control. I think where, like you say, the lack of buttons, though, when you're using a stylus versus using a mouse that's got buttons on it, I think that would be a drawback. But I mean, that all comes down to game design, right? So you design your game around the buttons that you have available, you know, and maybe even having, you know, some sort of game where you're doing aiming and, I don't know, firing happens automatically, like it's a rapid fire shooter, or, you know, there's possibilities though.
Yeah. So, Steven, I don't know, did you want to, I know you had at least one game on your mind.
Yeah, there's, when you told me about this topic, there's two that came to mind, although I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, you two, on how the gamepad could help, because I was kind of stumped on that one. But the first one is probably the one I want them both. So we'll just go with Little King Story for the first one, which I know Wareair was just playing through for Backlogist, and I think he really enjoyed it. So I'd recommend anyone else to do the same, because it's a great game. But it's a real-time, it's a strategy game. It is, I don't know, what is it, real? I guess it is real-time, yeah. It's not like a turn-based kind of thing. It's just you're going around, and it's an RPG-type thing, too, and... They didn't have IR controls with this first one, which was kind of a shock as well. But I don't know. The franchise itself is new, it's fresh, it is it's got a lot of charm, and there's a lot of like content packed into it. It was a very full game and everything. And I think that, you know, with any sort of strategy or sim games, you can really use a touch screen to micromanage your inventory or other things like that, or look at a map and everything. It really lends itself well to that, obviously. That's like the most obvious use of it. Have you guys played Little King's Story? Either of you?
No.
Nope.
Okay. It's amazing how many games like one of us has played, but the other ones haven't on this podcast. We're a very diverse group. That's all. But no, again, it's set in like a castle, medieval type setting, and you're this character who ends up kind of being thrown into controlling the town. You pretty much have to go to other kingdoms and overrule them, get rid of their king and take over the land, and then you get to expand your kingdom, and you get to build districts of your own and stuff like that, and take over the world, more or less. And so it's a lot of fun, again, and there's a lot of charm, but it pretty much, you know, you just use the pointer to click on the map on the screen, and then your character will run over there. Well, no, you use the joystick for this game, but you still use the...
You're still moving like a mouse pointer,
right? Sorry, it has been a long time since I played this game. I have very fond memories, but they are memories. They're not current experiences. But yeah, because it lacked the ability to like click on screen to do things. So you had to like aim your joystick at if you wanted to send people running towards an enemy, you just had to kind of hope you were in the right direction. You could easily call them back and everything, but it'd be better to use a stylus control for that, you know?
I mean, do you have any idea why they didn't use the pointer controls?
Yeah, it sounds like something that definitely should have been pointer controls.
I have not a clue. I never remembered reading any sort of...
There's nothing in the game that says to you, oh, they definitely couldn't pull off blank if they were using the pointer?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can
think really weird.
If I really was stretching for something is like, what if you accidentally were clicking on something, but you meant to click on something else? But again, you can move the camera around, so it should be pretty easy. Maybe it was an automated camera. I don't know. No, I mean, I'm just justifying nothing by trying.
Now, if you had a duplicate screen on your small screen and you could just touch around, is there any sort of fast action where it would be detrimental to have to look up and down? Or is it slow-paced enough that looking down wouldn't cause you any problems?
It's slow-paced enough. Like, enemies, I mean, they don't berate you, but it's not like they don't, you know, they take their sweet time. There's definitely a lot of challenge and tact you have to have. But, you know, like, you'll see a character or an enemy, like, winding up, you know, to make a move. And then, normally in that time, you would, like, run away, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe it might be kind of detrimental to be looking down at a screen. But perhaps if it was a mirrored screen, say it was the same screen on your tablet as on your TV, but you were actually able to control things differently, that might be useful, you know? But, I mean, and they could always change up, you know, enemy patterns, and they could slightly change the game without actually changing the game to adhere to that sort of challenge.
Yeah. Well, and I know the topic is, you know, how would the gamepad improve old Wii games? I'm not sure I want the gamepad shoehorned into every game just to have it there. I'd rather, if a game's played better just on the single screen, that they just leave the gamepad out of it. You know, use it where it makes sense. Don't use it for the sake of using it either.
Right. And so in the case of Little King's Story, I would actually prefer they just upgraded to like Pikmin 3 type controls, you know?
Right.
And then went from there, because Pikmin 3 is obviously doing it right. But the other game that I really would like to see on the Wii U is Boom Blocks. Have you guys played that?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I have played it, but not extensively, only for like probably half an hour.
It's one of those like games that is just simple, pick up, play, and like you and a friend will just be playing for hours, and you'll be laughing, and you'll be like just doing, you know, crazy stuff just to do it, and it's pretty much like Jenga with baseballs, and then of course the different balls have different. I think the balls had different attributes to them. I know the blocks did. And, you know, you just had to try to score a certain amount of points. It was like a high score type game. And it was just ridiculously fun. You would use the Wii remote to kind of literally do a throwing motion. And the angle, I believe, or was it, yeah, did the angle actually, I'm trying to think, did you use the joystick or did you, because it wasn't Wii Motion Plus.
No, you'd use the pointer to move your shot around. You'd hold down a trigger sort of thing to drag the screen around and get your shot.
Right.
Aim your reticule. And then you hold down the button and you make the throwing motion, and you have to release the button at the right point in the throw to get your optimum power.
Yeah, and I actually wouldn't want them to use Wii Motion Plus, because I do like just having the preciseness of lining up your shot and then going for it. Because, you know, like in real life, you and I could definitely take a baseball and aim somewhere and then do it, and we'd have the exact accuracy that we were aiming for. but we
must exact.
Well, yeah,
you're that good.
You might be overhyping my baseball skills, but I get your point.
But you know, our arm would be throwing it in the direction we would expect it to throw, whether or not that would be a good one or not. You know what I mean? But yeah, like, we wouldn't, it, just by the simple act of moving my arm up, that doesn't change where the ball will go later, because I know I'll be able to get to that point.
Right.
But
right.
Like,
I get what you're saying. I agree completely. I think if anything, Boomblocks would benefit from the gamepad in perhaps the stage designer, where, you know,
there you go.
The second one, I don't remember if the first one did, but the second one especially had a really in-depth designer where people created some crazy stages that I saw on YouTube. But, you know, just to have that ability to, you know, even something as simple as throwing up all the different block types or something up on the pad, so I can quickly switch between them. Just go touch that one, place it here, touch that one, place it here, you know. Even if I'm still, you know, on the main screen doing the actual designing and placement, but just having the ability to see all my options down below.
Well, like, I mean, in general, just level designers can benefit from that sort of thing. I remember spending a lot of time making levels for Time Splitters, Future Perfect's multiplayer, and you know, it's just tedious. You know, no matter how easy it is, it usually is tedious to some degree, because you just kind of want to do it and then get into the level and play. You know, so I don't know if the gamepad will change gameplay in the same way that motion controls did, but I think it can absolutely supplement it in really nice ways like that.
Well, and this is where I wish the gamepad had a multi-touch screen, you know, because there's so many things you can do in terms of, you know, quickly zooming in or zooming out. When you're trying to design something, you want to get a pulled back view and quickly switch to a zoomed in view. And that multi-touch is just so intuitive on something like an iPod Touch or an iPad that, you know, I would love to have that in there. So I'm kind of disappointed there that it's just the single touch.
Yeah.
Man. I'm not a multi-touch fan, so I'd be fine if they just had a little magnifying glass icon in the corner that I can tap. That'd be
good. Well, I'll give you an example too. In something like Uncharted on the PS Vita, where, you know, you're dragging pieces of a picture that has been torn up, and you have to place the pieces and you have to rotate them. Right, so you touch the piece with one finger, you drag it around, and you use the two fingers to rotate it. And just something as simple as that, you know, I mean, it's goofy. It's not the main game, but I enjoy those little touches, and knowing that I'm not going to have the ability to touch and rotate using two fingers, it's like, why can't I just rotate the screen or rotate the object I'm interacting with?
Sure.
Because I'm limited to a single touch.
Well, you'll just have to wait for the gamepad motion touch when that comes out in 4 years. Well, can we all agree, though, that if they bring back another installment of Boomblocks, that they don't put the word, that they actually put Boomblocks as the title on the box instead of Bash Party?
Bash Party, yeah. Absolutely.
That was such a disservice. Anyway, Duncan, are there any new IPs from the Wii generation that you would like to see?
Well, I'll throw out Muramasa. Not so much for the gamepad, but just to have it in high definition. Would be awesome. I mean, playing through Dust has a lot of similarities with Muramasa, and, you know, seeing that game in high def, those sprites are just the tiny little bunny rabbits they have jumping around in the background are just the cutest darn things. And I wish every game looked that good, you know, just amazing animation. I thought, you know, I keep thinking back to Muramasa and going, oh, I want that in HD. But also for, you know, just playing with the gamepad, I guess, hey, here's some more buttons. I could have a jump button. And that would, for me, solve my major gripe with that game.
Mm.
I mean, I know you can adapt and you can press up, but I like the jump button.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I had that game on my list too of new IPs I'd like to see get another treatment. But as I was thinking about it, is it Vanillaware? Is that the name of the people that, right? And I know they've made a couple game, or at least one other game that had, was Odinsphere?
Odinsphere.
Like that. So do they ever do like sequels, or do they just make another game in the same vein as, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think they've done any sequels that I know of.
Mm. So if we were to see a new sort of installment on Wii U, it would probably just be a totally new setting, so to speak, right? A new gameplay, somewhat.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'd like them to make something that was similar in style to Muramasa. I mean, a lot of their games, they've kind of shifted tone or shifted emphasis on RPG versus action sort of thing. And I like the balance that they had going with Muramasa.
Right.
I mean, I had my complaints with the titles, but I liked a lot of things about it. So something in that
plus,
same vein.
It was so focused, or I guess so much of the selling point was these amazing visuals, right?
Yeah.
And I think that just the setting of Muramasa compared to something like Odin Sphere was just so much more appealing to me. So while of course I would love to see any beautiful 2D hand drawn game, I would especially like to see another game, you know, in that, sort of feudal Japan style.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it was just amazing to see these, like, you know, sort of like these, like some of the boss designs where you kind of almost recognize them from, if you've ever seen like the old Japanese, you know, paintings and such, but it was like they were brought to life on the screen and you were, you know, battling against them. I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah. The other game I thought would benefit would be Spyborgs. You know, because they had those areas, I don't know if you played it, but where they've got like a shimmering, almost invisible area, you know, that you have to point your controller at to unveil, hey, there's a secret item here, right?
Okay.
And I just thought, well, what if they didn't have any kind of shimmering area at all? What if you had to hold the gamepad up to scan the area, which is really what they were going for the first time around. But, you know, I think that would be just a cool little way to implement what they were going for, even if it's not the same game. If a game was trying to use something similar, that would be an interesting thing where you can't see something when you're looking at it at the main screen. But, oh, I hold up my scanner, and my scanner can see these hidden items or these invisible items.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I'm thinking a lot of that stuff is, you know, would certainly lend itself to the gamepad. And so what I thought about, because people have said like, oh, you know, scanning in Metroid, blah, blah. I'm not sure how much I would want, you know, like in Metroid, at least in Metroid Prime, you really want to just like tap to a different visor, look around, and then move on or something. And, you know, I don't know if I would want to be like lifting up the gamepad every 5 seconds, you know, scroll around and then put it back down. But a mechanic that I found in The Last Story, because The Last Story kind of has a similar thing where there will be hidden, you know, items and go into your sort of like, looking mode. But what it does is it just sort of gives you like a little indicator in the corner when there's something around you that you can see. So for something like, as you described, I think that would be amazing if they had that sort of scanning element, but with just sort of like a little, you know, just like a little bing reminder saying like, okay, now, you know, now's the time to look around you or something like that.
Yeah. Or even if there was a, you know, even just the same screen, but always in a visor mode, on the second screen, because there's several games I played this generation where you can toggle between views, right? You can like, oh, I've got an infrared view. And then I find like, why wouldn't I just always leave myself on this view? It's way more interesting, except that it's ugly.
Right.
You take these beautiful graphics and you turn them into these colored blotches.
Yeah.
And you go, well, maybe, you know, having the best of both worlds and always being able to see the beautiful graphics, but, you know, just being able to just glance right down without having to toggle my view, just toggle my eyes.
Right. But then like, wouldn't it always be aimed at the floor or something?
If you but I guess in that case, not having the gamepad where you had to hold it up to the screen, just always having that second view, which is completely different from what I was talking about before.
I get you. No, I get you. So it would just be, it'd be what's on the screen, but the different,
the alternate filter. Yeah. Just sitting down there all the time.
Okay. I got you. You know what, since the topic is about new IPs, you know, what were your thoughts on Spyborgs? Cause that was a game before it came out. I was really looking forward to it, but then I don't know, it came out and I don't remember what the thing, there was something about it that turned me off. And then I feel like 2 weeks later, it was like $9, which you talked about price indicating quality. I was like, whoa, this must really not be very good.
It felt like a second rate game. It felt a little one note. It had some elements that I liked, and I kind of liked the upgrade stuff to it and some of the unique bits, like the, you know, the teamwork moves with your partners, you know, and it was a fun game to play with my kids. You know, where you'd have, okay, we're going to initiate a teamwork move, and then one person's got to do something, and then the other person has to switch and do their part. But, overall, it wasn't a, blow me away kind of gamer at all.
Gotcha. All right, were there any other new IPs that you'd like to see show up again on the Wii U?
That's all I came up with.
Yeah, and same here. I mean, I'm sure I could rack my brain further, but those are the two key ones that I'd love to see. Well, I guess with that, we'll take another short break, and we'll be back shortly.
Go!
All right, and we're back, and in a little bit of a surprise, kind of. Those other two topics that we talked about today definitely went on a bit longer than the normal. My bad, I should have probably dictated that, but you know what? I enjoy the conversation too much, so, you know, time be damned. But that means that there's not really any time for my backlog topic, which is okay, because do you guys really want to hear about my backlog or why I have a backlog? I don't think so.
I'm sure we'll get a chance in the future again.
Yeah,
I've heard your backlog is lovely.
Well, thank you. Rumors and hearsay can be a wonderful thing. But yeah, so I mean, all I was going to mention is things like, you know, how do they get so bad, etc., yada, yada. But you know what? That's kind of irrelevant, at least right now. Yeah, like you said, Joe, we'll get back to it eventually. Maybe when the Wii U comes out, it'll be more of a relevant topic because we'll have all this old generation stuff we want to complete while there's this new stuff. So that dynamic could be there. But I did want to mention Backlogus, which this is the first episode of the show after its completion. And, you know, a big thank you to Mr. Mustache for just the idea in general, let alone other things. But it was definitely cool and fun, and I think we hit 50 pages of discussion by the end of the month, which is pretty impressive.
It is.
So, you know, obviously we were all interested in the games we were playing. And I know that not everyone got to play, you know, the games that they wanted to, but, you know, life happens, etc.
Who would do that? Who would do such a thing?
I don't know.
It's disrespectful.
Someone who hates Negative World, maybe?
Probably.
No. But seriously, for all those who don't know, Joe is someone who didn't get a chance to finish his thing. Not to out you, but just so there's context. Yeah. Of course, I only had one game. Well, like, some people had five, and like they didn't get to finish all five. Like, okay. You know, that's the tough call. I was only signed up for one, so it was pretty easy for me to get mine out of the way. Epic Mickey was the one I wanted to get done, and I did get that done, but I've already talked about that game at length, and nothing changed, really. I'm still interested in the sequel, but I want to see some reviews first before I dive into that. But yeah, so, I mean, it was a fun site-wide event, and I'm actually really happy about the events that we have been doing in general. We've got, like we already mentioned, the Mario Kart tournament coming up. Mario Kart 7. There's a Shocktober event being planned right now for playing a horror game through the month of October. There's the movie club that Mr. Mustache also does. There's like 80 different things that he does. I can't even list them all. But it's just really nice to see a community like ourselves that goes beyond just responding to a message. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When I was at my time at IGN, I kind of felt like, you know, that was it. And that was fine. I mean, I got a lot out of that at the time before the whole exodus and all that. But there was nothing that really brought us all together. And, of course, I use that figuratively. But it brings a lot of people together, these clubs or these commitments to these pretty much faceless people. I mean, like, you know, none of us have sat in the same room. I know some users definitely meet each other. And I've met some, you know, Game Dead Grant and Zero and all that stuff. Like, I've spent time with them. But It's just cool to actually connect with people from across the freaking globe and do things together. So Backlogus was another example of that. And what a great theme, considering we all probably have games that... Like, I wonder how many people out there actually don't have a backlog. I feel that's harder to do these days, you know?
It's gotta be next to impossible.
Yeah. I mean, I actually have an NES backlog from when I was a kid, because there's a lot of shit that I didn't finish, and I would like to. Super Mario Brothers, the original, was on that just a few years ago. I realized, you know, I've never been to the last level. I'd gotten close, but I'd never beat it. I was like, that's got to change. So I,
what?
Yeah, so, I mean, I beat it, you know. I'm much more adept at my skills now, but I mean, I just think it's cool, and I just want to give some recognition out to Mustache and also just to the community. It probably sounds like I'm kissing your ass, and maybe I am a little bit, but as a Nintendo fan since I was 4 years old, I really appreciate a community like this and the things that we do here. So instead of talking about the backlog, that's what I'll say. And if you guys want to add anything to it, you can.
I just want to state for the record that I'm not faceless. I do have a face. It's not much to see, but you know, it's there.
You know, touche, because right now on the Skype call, your icon is your face, while Joe's is his me, and mine is Dr. Fucking Mario. So so you're the only one here with a face. So
that's actually my face double, though.
Okay. Yeah. Your face double, that's very nice. More handsome than you, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
That guy on there, man, he's a good looker.
Yeah. Okay. where to go from there? So, anything you want to add, Joe?
I love Negative World.
Well, I heart Negative World. And then Duncan just laughs.
No, it's a great place to be. I especially love that. You know, I was going to say Pandarius, but Guillaume, invited me there. And so right from the get-go, when I showed up, I felt like it was a place where people wanted me to be. And that's never changed. It's always a very welcoming place to be, and everybody's just so friendly and inviting.
That's kind of, you know, that's a good point. It's kind of nice, to think about how the different ways that people start coming there. Like, some people have heard the podcast first, and then they want to come join the site. Other people have heard the Nintendo World Report podcast and have joined the site because of that, or because of Guillaume's recent work with them. You were brought in by another person, and Joe, you found this place kind of through your own, because you have your own setup, you know, your own site and everything, and like,
right?
You know, so,
well, yeah, I kind of found out about it from actually, like, you know, I knew a friend of Rob's in real life,
right? So I mean, even that, just you know, Rob's influence and just, well, not his influence, but just
his ubiquity.
Yeah. His notoriousness, got out. But yeah, so it's just cool that, gamers of all kinds and types, you know, come here. And like we were saying, and probably you'll hear it in the post content, about how we all play different games too, you know? Like, we may not always have, like, the same kind of experiences to discuss because we didn't play the same games or we didn't play them even, you know, remotely enough, but we're all unique, and that's wonderful. I don't know. I'm tired. I'm hungry. So I think it's time we end this podcast. It's been
Sounds
a pretty
good.
Long recording. So, you know, that wraps up another episode of the Negative World Podcast. I hope you all enjoyed. And we'd like you all to comment on what you've heard. And you can do that at negativeworld.org, which most of you, I'm sure, know. Simply just find the thread that'll go up for this episode. And if you don't want to subscribe to Negative World, you know, you can find us on Facebook. You just have to search for negativeworld.org. And you can also reach us on Twitter, which is @negative_world. There's also, you know, an enhanced version of this podcast if you're listening to the regular one. We have both now. And the enhanced one includes chapter markers and, you know, art for that. So it's easy to distinguish, you know, what section you're at in case you want to skip around based on the description. So thank you, Duncan and Joe, for doing this with me. I encourage everyone out there to come join us in the show sometime. Duncan, you know, was our guest, and he was a first timer. So we thank you, Duncan, for being brave and joining us today.
No, I thank you for giving me the opportunity. It's been a great experience.
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna thank you one more time for the fact that, you know, this was such short notice that you came, and you're doing this so early in the morning because you're 3 hours behind me and Joe, and you're doing this from your iPod. So, you know, not having a computer that's working is not an excuse, folks, because Duncan's doing it on his iPod. So
if Duncan can do it, yeah, anyone can do it.
That's the new Negative World slogan, if Duncan can do it. but anyway, I appreciate your time here on the boards, guys. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you in a few weeks.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
I mean, I might joke, like, saying, go play this now, or blah, blah, blah,
right.
But, I mean, a lot of these games have very, I guess, unique appeals, and you couldn't just recommend them to anyone.
Right, and we're not a news organization like IGN sort of is, where we are kind of required to all play the same games to try to, so we can have a supposed general consensus of what the game is like. We're just three, like right now we're just three guys who came together who have different histories. You know, we're all different ages, so we all started at different times in our lives. We all played different games, different influences, etc. Which I think is the beauty of this podcast and the site, but it also can be a detriment, obviously.
Yeah, because wouldn't it be great to be one of the media outlets that actually they send you games because they want you to play them and talk about them?
Right.
Yeah.
You'd think so. I mean, I would absolutely love to go in depth like with you guys if they sent us, you know, if Nintendo sent us a copy of this or copy of that on occasion.
Yeah. Sometimes I hear of sites that are in that sort of deal, and I don't know, maybe I haven't seen the web traffic figures, but I don't get the sense that they are like all that popular or all that much more popular than Negative World. So I don't know how you get in on that, but
I don't know. Whose flashlight do you gotta jerk off to get into that?
Exactly.
So this sounds like a great ending for the show.